Tom Sullivan is an award-winning actor, musician, composer, and producer who once met Martin Luther King and Lyndon Johnson. He's also an accomplished author, having written the books If You Could See What I Hear and Tom Sullivan's Adventures in Darkness. Tom Sullivan is something else, too, blind, and has been virtually since birth. One thing he can hear, though, is the sound of snowflakes falling. He's in town tonight to perform a one-man show called Adventures in Darkness. It's part of a special anniversary for the Children's Center for the Visually Impaired. CCVI provides services to visually impaired kids from birth through kindergarten and has been doing so for 60 years now. More on Tom's free performance in just a few minutes. Tom, welcome to Kansas City. So nice to have you here this morning.
Steve, I loved Hedrick's interview. That was marvelous. Marvelous, marvelous stuff. We need American thinkers and American treasures, and he's one of them.
He should get him stirred up, I think, a little bit.
I think so.
Well, tell me about the sound of snowflakes falling. What does that sound like, Tom?
You know, it's an analogy, really.
Yeah.
What I'm really trying to say to people is that there are five glorious senses, not just one.
Mm.
And it's interesting. I'm a runner as a hobby, a marathoner. And down here on the floor to my left is a big German Shepherd guide dog.
Mm-hmm.
And every morning at home in California, we start at my house and run down to the beach and run along the ocean. There are 15 different kinds of waves you can hear, if you're willing to listen, all the way from the ones that come in at low tide over sun-drenched sandbars and they sound like a cannonade in a war zone, to the ones that kind of bump together with outgoing sand at high tide, like Muhammad Ali's fighting Joe Frazier.
Mm-hmm.
There's 11 different types of sand. There's 50 kinds of birds or more that you can hear. And above my beach, at about the 4 mile mark, there's a restaurant that opens at 6 in the morning. And the smells of coffee and muffins comes drifting down and blends with, oh, let's say eucalyptus and lilac and orange blossom and single-cell life clinging to rock and seaweed and kelp. And it creates a sensorial world that's available to everyone, but no one's using it. And so when you mention me as a blind person, frankly, I'm the luckiest guy in the world, because about 85% of what you know because your eyes bring in the information.
Mm-hmm.
But you're missing so much that's joyous. The other thing is, and I haven't said this to anybody for a long time, I've never met an ugly person unless they wanted to be. Think about it.
Unless, I saw that line somewhere. That's a terrific line.
Unless that's how they chose to operate.
Mm-hmm.
It's a question of choice. I don't live in a system of labels or categorization. I'm not saying that my world wasn't hard to adjust to.
Mm-hmm.
But the perks in my world now far outweigh the crap.
You know, I couldn't go 26 miles with you, but I could go a few, and I would love to have you sit me down sometime and talk to me about the sound of those waves. That sounds just terrific.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. It's, you know, it's stuff like, how do you assess beauty,
mm-hmm.
you know, in physical terms? I was working for Good Morning America years ago, and they sent me to interview Bo Derek. When she had done 10, remember the movie?
I've interviewed her, but you tell your story, then I'll tell mine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm supposed to do this interview, and the camera guys, the cinematographers, are saying, Jesus, what a waste. We're sending this blind guy to interview a perfect 10. So I'm thinking, well, what do I ask her? I've got to come up with something. So the camera rolled, and I said, Bo, people tell me you're a perfect physical 10, but I can't look at you, so why should I like you? And she started to cry. And she said, isn't that the point? All they know is that I've got a good-looking butt in a bathing suit. They don't know that I'm interested in the environment or animal rights or that I really do love my husband. And she went on. But my point is, it's so easy to live in a world where the immediacy of how we categorize limits the potential of joy and human experience that goes way past that standardized level.
Yeah. Well, I have to admit, I don't ask for autographs hardly ever in my line of work, but I did ask for hers.
Yeah.
Well, just to prove that the guy's back to the office, I had met her.
Well, you
he still thought I made it up.
You may have asked for the autograph. I went for the Braille shot. Yes, sir, Evon.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I didn't feel one ounce of guilt about it either.
You know, I love some of the adventures that you tell about yourself as a kid. As a boy, you were blind then. You were the first of your gang to explore the local haunted house. tell us about the local haunted house, Tom.
This was great. It was an old house. It was part of the Scituate, Massachusetts lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly the old lighthouse keeper had been having an illicit affair and he'd been stabbed and thrown off the top of the lighthouse.
I love stories that kids tell.
Yeah.
And maybe that was like 10% true.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And anyway, his ghost was still supposed to be in the spook house. And nobody would go in there, you know, the kids in the neighborhood. So I thought, I've got to find a way to relate to these kids. So I said, well, hell, I can't see ghosts. I'll go in there. So we snuck out one night and broke through the window, and I stayed inside there for about 9 hours.
No kidding.
And, you know,
how old were you?
I was 9 or 10.
Man.
And there were rats and stuff, and I could hear the squeaking and the squirreling of the rats. But I survived, and I, you know, it was one of the things I did. Here's what it is, Steve. I didn't care what it took to have an adventure in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know how you were talking about snowflakes?
Yeah.
In the winter in Boston, we would get a snow blizzard like you got here a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a wall down the street from my house that we called Shingle Cliff. And it was maybe 8 or 9 feet high. And so it'd snow, and some kid in the neighborhood would say, hey, Sullivan, jump off that and see if it's deep enough. Which, you know, I would. Or, you know, I was the guy that would go up and climb the highest tree on the thinnest branch. But it was only because all I wanted was to be in that world. I wanted desperately to be part of their world, not the isolated world that I lived in.
And it worked.
Yeah, but when we talk about that in relationship to what I'm doing tonight,
mm-hmm.
Again, when I say I'm that lucky, it's because I was, you know, I don't care whether you believe in a higher power or wherever you come from, but whether it's genetics or God, I was blessed with unique skills. So music and dark and sports were my tickets out of darkness. They were my way out. You know,
my sense of you is that you sort of never hesitated. You never held back. You sort of plunged forward. And I'm wondering,
plunged is a good word for a blind guy.
Yeah, well, sure. how were you able to do that though, Tom? Where did that come from?
In life, if you're lonely enough. Okay, so here's the best example. I would be in my backyard, and down the street from the house, there was a Little League field.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to hear the sound of kids playing ball, and I desperately wanted to be in their game,
yeah.
Right? So I would pick up—my father was an Irish bar owner, and Ted Williams from the Red Sox was his partner. So I had a Louisville Slugger bat that Ted had autographed.
Mm.
And I would find rocks on the—I'd turn on WHDH in Boston— the Red Sox games. And as Williams would come up, or Jackie Jensen or Jim Pearsall, I'd throw rocks up in the air and try to hit them with my bat.
Sure.
And I'd announce myself. Well, this one afternoon, I hit a shot over my backyard fence, and I was so excited. I ran around my yard, and I slid into my imaginary home plate, and a little boy who'd been coming home from the game came by my fence, and he saw me doing it. And he said, hey, kid, are you blind? And I said, yeah. He said, well, you know, that's a stupid game, and you're kind of a stupid kid. And then he started to chant, and he chanted, blindy, blindy, blindy. And I hated the sound of his voice, and I'd throw rocks at the sound, and blind, and he'd move out of the way, blind. Mm-hmm. And eventually, he got tired, and he went away, and I went to the tire swing in the corner of the yard and cried my eyes out. But I realized that I only had one choice. I had to be smarter and tougher. And there was a fence around my yard, and I remember that day I climbed to the top of it and jumped off, and my mother had to come get me, but I was free. And I said to myself that day, I will never, ever be captured by a fence again. That's the end. It won't happen again.
Tom Sullivan speaks this evening at 6. His program is titled Adventures in Darkness, and Evening with Tom Sullivan. It's at the Nelson Atkins Museum. The show is free, but please call the Children's Center for the Visually Impaired to reserve your spot for the performance. That number for CCVI is 816-841-CCVI, and we'll put that up on our website later on today. That's 6 o'clock this evening. How did you happen to meet Martin Luther King?
Oh, it's a great story.
Yeah, I bet.
Great story. I had a music teacher named Hank Santos, an African-American guy. And I hated to play Bach and Chopin and Brahms. My father owned all these Irish bars, and I had listened to Ella and Ellington and Louis. So I wanted to play jazz. Plus, rock and roll was coming in, and I wanted that. And I just started to hear Motown, and I wanted that. And so he was smart enough to let me play whatever I wanted. And one day he said, Tom, I want to bring you to my house. I've got some friends coming and I want you to play for them. Because he knew I was an angry blind kid who felt cheated. And I went to the house and I played. And afterwards, this man came up and he said, my friend Hank tells me you're really a very angry kid. Why is that? And I gave him a litany, you know, kids won't play with me and I don't belong anywhere and I'm lonely. And no matter how good I am at something, they don't think I'm good enough. And I went through this thing and he said, well, don't you think you'd be better off teaching them? And don't you think you'd be better off defining yourself in ways that make you valuable? And he went on and on. And he said, by the way, I'm Martin Luther King.
You're kidding me.
Turned out that he was my music teacher's roommate at Boston University.
Get out of here.
Yeah. I've had so many. I mean, I'm in music because of Duke Ellington. I got a job in an after-hours club in Boston. And I was in the bar at like 2 in the morning singing. And I was singing, never treats me sweet and gentle the way she should because I've got it bad. Anyway, I'm singing I've Got It Bad and that ain't good. And the piano player stopped, and I said, what's the matter? He said, he's here. And this man walked in from the back of the club, and he said, young man, you sure can sing a lot of notes, can't you? And I said, sir, this is with a bunch of drunks. He said, less is more, kid. I wrote that song, and it was Ellington, and he came to the piano, and he sat down, and he made me sing it note for note the way he had written it. And then the next summer, he invited me to come out and be the singer with the Ellington Band. And then the next summer, he arranged for me to sing with Count Basie's band because Joe Williams was sick. And then Ella and I became friends. And so I started this musical life with these giants of sound. And then, you know, I made records for Clive Davis and did all that early stuff in my show business.
I would have loved to have met Duke Ellington. Just have read a lot about him, watched him on film. Would have loved to have met that man.
He was the most cerebral, elegant soul.
Elegant. That's the word, isn't it?
Yeah. And the things people don't know about Ella went back to Chicago School of Music, learned to read music. And when you do a session with Ella, and I did too, Ella could read fly specs. I mean, she would look at the whole orchestra score. And, you know, people think she was just this free-form improviser. Forget it.
They always say that. They always say it's easy. There's nothing to it, but it's just not the case
Mel
at all.
Mel Torme, a friend of mine. Mel wrote all his own arrangements. You know, the only self-taught guy was Buddy Rich. You know, Buddy just played.
Yeah. Tell me about meeting Helen Keller.
Oh, boy. So I went to Perkins School for the Blind.
We get about 30 seconds left.
I went to Perkins School for the Blind. I was kicked
out. Now you're going fast. Now you're talking.
I was kicked out 11 times. And the one time I stole cookies, and in the principal's office that morning, I was in the punishment chair. This woman came in, and it was Helen Keller. And she was told that I was blind. She turned to me and said, little boy, they say you're a devil. Is that right? And I said, yes. And she said, good. Keep it up.
And off you go with Helen Keller.
That's right.
That's a good memory. Well, again, Adventures in Darkness, An Evening with Tom Sullivan is tonight at the Nelson Atkins Museum. It starts at 6. The show is free, but please call the Children's Center for the Visually Impaired to reserve your spot. That number for CCVI is 816-841-CCVI. And Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for coming in.
I loved it.
Again, that's Tom Sullivan. You can find more information on all of our broadcasts at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, What a Country! Yakov Smirnoff joins us in studio to talk about why he's leaving Branson for a nationwide tour. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of a Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.